Welcome back to the Cynical Podcast. I'm Dion.
And I'm Jake.
This week, we're tackling some of the films from Lupin the Third franchise, one of the longest running anime series or films from Japan that has had many iterations on the big screen and even a small screen, and that we are both fans of.
That's right, and we'll be particularly focusing on Hayao Miyazaki's directorial debut from 1979, The Castle of Cagliostro, suggested by Dion for CineClub last year. We'll also briefly touch upon some of the other noteworthy films like The Mystery of Mamo and the CGI revelation that was Lupin the First, which I thought was really good as well.
Yeah. So how do you think The Gentleman Thief fares in the landscape anime films? Because I absolutely adore Castle Cagliostro.
Yes.
You don't know.
I was going to say the same thing. I think The Castle of Cagliostro is superb. It is one of my favourite animated films of all time. I mean, I think it works. It works as a Miyazaki film because it's like
it was his first film, wasn't it?
It was pretty much his first film. I mean, he'd done a bit of work on the actual TV show.
Yeah, because the guy who made the Moomins did
That's
the show,
right. Yeah,
and legitimately because the Moomins pretty much did shit.
Yeah,
they had to replace it.
That was the show was basically getting horrible ratings, so they just had to bring someone else in, and they just so happened to bring the two bright sparks of Miyazaki and Takahata.
I think Castle to me is probably the best, my favorite film of all time.
Really?
Which is very strange because you think for me it's like, oh, some weird pulp film, but like generally it's well done because the film pretty much follows Lupin and Jigen and Goemon and Fujiko, characters who were well known, but they're very much not. They're very different from what we've seen so far.
It's weird, isn't it? Because it's not really that faithful of a film compared to quite a lot of the TV show. And I think it really helps as a gateway because when you watch that first, you don't really realize how different it is. But then as you watch more of the show, because this is what happened with me. I watched the film, then got more into the series as a whole, and then went back and watched the film again and sort of appreciated it more because I just was like, oh, I really like how much of a sort of fresh spin it is on those characters. And like, obviously the animation's stupidly good. Like the budget's really high.
Have you watched the storyboard version of the film?
No, I haven't. Online,
there's a storyboard and it's like so well done.
Yeah.
And what shocks me is Miyazaki calls him his weakest film. He hates
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah. There's an interview and mentions...
That's my favourite. It's like it's probably the best one he ever did in my opinion.
Like legit, I'm not a big fan. I'm a big fan of Ghibli films, sorry. But I'm I think this just outright shines it because bias aside, but it's such a simple premise with some very like lovely characters and it works because there's a lot of very much a great story on mortality with how Lupin gets shot and the idea that Lupin very much is shown early on as just a mortal character, like mortal cartoon character, but slowly mortality and the idea of being trapped in this castle isolation and then you have the very fun Lupin-esque plot on Treasure, which is very fun.
Well, it's quite grounded for a Lupin film, which I really appreciate. Because don't get me wrong, like I do love The Mystery of Mamo as well. But going from that to this as like the two films that came out back to back, you get one where it's like this evil Paul Williams looking clone guy who's just like a giant brain attached to a spaceship. Compared to this, where it's like it's just an evil count in a castle somewhere
in
this
fairy tale esque story.
Yeah, and there's a princess trapped in the castle, and the gentleman thief who's like he's sort of an anti-hero. He becomes like the sort of suave gentleman, like sort of swashbuckling hero who has to go and I mean the one thing that I don't like as much about it is it kind of takes the other characters out of the play.
Yeah,
I
think that's an issue for other Lupin films, I've noticed.
Yeah.
Even when we're watching some now, when we're getting to the first and Mr. Mamo.
Yeah.
Mr. Mamo is probably the most I've been part of. But like with this, they just feel kind of less. There's less scenes where they interact.
There's less for them to do, I think, which is.
Fujiko just only really interacts with Lupin.
Pretty much. And doesn't she like pretty much. I kind of like it when she comes back as a different undercover character at the end.
She has to like have a TV. Like be on a TV host.
She's so unlike Fujiko in this movie. Actually,
she's got
totally different colored hair. She feels a totally different character.
I think she has a similar hair to what she looks like in part one. I think unless I'm
wrong. No, she's got like blonde hair.
Oh,
for most
does she?
Of the film, doesn't she? I think anyway, if I remember rightly, which threw me off because generally she always had like light brown ginger hair, which I didn't realize she was Fujiko. I didn't realize that was a proper...
Until they mentioned it.
Until they mentioned, like that. And they, you know, that's the whole twist where
Jigen's very different too. He's a very safer version of him. I really like that. I really like
I like him in this. Most
I think the whole point was Lupin part one, the first, after episode 12 when he took over, was very much connected to Castle.
Yeah.
Where this is an older, wider Lupin.
Yes.
And in part two, I think they mentioned that the Lupin from the ending of part one, two is pretty much the Lupin that pretty much is a different version of Lupin.
Right,
and the
okay.
Lupin we see pretty much saving the day of part two is the one from part one.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, I mean, I can, I believe that. I think this is because it's, you know, because it's Miyazaki and particularly because of the design and the green jacket. I always saw Castle Cagliostro as like the big finale of part one basically.
Yeah.
Like, even though it came out after part one had already, like, no, after part two had already started, I see them as like the, I think that's maybe why I like part one so much, because it feels like the slightly more primitive take on the Castle of Cagliostro structure.
Yeah.
And there's that, there's a few episodes in that show where it feels like, oh, this is totally like, you can see them developing that, those ideas that they are then going to use in a big, big, you know, sort of proper theatrical anime film.
One bit I really love about Castle, though, is a bit I always remember, and it's the bit where on the roof, and then Lupin just, I remember I mentioned this earlier, but Lupin just gets shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like I said, playing Mortality. That always caught me off guard, because there's no sense of, like, and I love it, there's no sense of, like, stress or tension.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you're just, you're halted to the screen.
Yeah,
and
it reminds you that he is just a dude at the end of the day. He can just get shot, and you're like, oh god, yeah, and then, but then he comes back from it because he's the goat.
He's like the main character. He's literally the main title,
exactly.
Which is funny. And then you have like Clarice, which I'm surprised we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, true.
Which is pretty much the, well, I want to call it generic, because she's very interesting character.
Yeah,
because you learn that Lupin did meet her as a kid.
I like that whole thing. Yeah, where it starts as like, you know, because obviously the whole Lupin thing, there's that whole thing where he's got like the womanizer reputation. Yeah.
Which he then, by what I remember, it's his change of heart, which makes him mature.
Which is great, because it shows him sort of maturing, and he's a bit more like, you know, he's a bit more noble at heart. And it's like, I just love this interpretation of the characters. I really do. I think even the thing with the side characters, they don't get as much to do, but there's like little moments where like in sort of, if this was earlier in the timeline, they would probably have stood in his way and tried to stop him. But I like the fact that you can kind of tell he's more mature, and they're a bit like, oh, actually, no, go on, go have your adventure, go save the princess, we'll help you out, we'll be your gunman.
I can see
samurai.
Why people don't like it, but I love it.
I think it's cool.
I think it's amazing. And then
even before they get to the castle, I mean, Lupin and Jigen have quite a lot of cool moments.
The bit with them in the restaurant.
That's a great little scene. And then when the sort of, they always remind me, there's a boss in the first Time Crisis that looks exactly like the little bodyguard.
Yeah.
So I always, whenever I watch this movie, I'm always like, oh, it's like those, the dudes from Time Crisis. Those little bodyguards, like when they come to the hotel and like they realize, oh, like they're bulletproof and, you know, they have to escape out the window and everything. That's really cool. And then you get the whole thing where Jigen comes with like a massive like tank gun basically, and he's just like shooting them.
What
all
I really like
end,
also,
and, like,
I believe, is, you know, the car chase in the beginning.
Yeah,
that was inspired by Spielberg when he was doing Tintin.
Yeah, he was. There's the fingerprints that this film has had on like loads and loads of proper cinema,
cars,
animated stuff. John Lasseter, I think. Oh. I know. Well, yeah, I know he's not exactly a great judge of character now, but he. He has gone on record a few times saying that this was when he was like studying animation in college. This was like the film he always used to show off to people because nobody had ever heard of it. And he'd be like, look how cool this is. Like, and you know, and he's, I think there's an interview he's like saying about how it was like, it was the thing that impressed his now wife. Like, he met her at a party and showed her this movie. And,
when I was
you know,
doing the essay for the Ghibli one, I actually used one of the interviews he
did.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Like, it's such an interesting thing that literally, he was so invested in that he actually premiered Howl's Moving Castle at Pixar.
That's cool. Well, and even, is it the Great Mouse Detective that has the whole clock tower finale, which is lifted straight from this film? Because, I mean, and this is another reason I really like this film. I love films that are, like, confined to one setting, especially when it's, like, a really cool setting like this. Like, the castle, the fact that it, if it was just called The Castle of Cagliostro and like the end of the movie, like Castle in the
to
Sky.
To be honest, though,
example.
You say that, but some of the film, a lot of films set in like Italy, they do go.
Oh, it's set. Yeah, they go around Italy, but like most, pretty much all of the action and the whole focus is them setting up base around this castle and getting like lost in all of the little areas inside. So like, yeah, like I said, Castle in the Sky, for example, that's called Castle in the Sky. And the end of the movie, they get to the Castle in the Sky. It's like cool. Yeah. This I like the fact they have. They have the opening, you have the fire treasure, like opening credits, which I really like. It's such a great song, that little moment.
That they had to that is so popular, they had to reuse it in every other Lupin film.
Yeah, like, I love that song, and I love that little, the art in that. Yeah. It's just such a peaceful, like, chill film, and yet it's still quite action-packed, because then, like I say, they get to the castle, and it, like, it shows you, like, all of the little locations, so, like, most of it is... They're trying to get to the tower where Clarice is, and you're like, okay, you can get to that tower like that. And then you see they've got like the gyrocopter, there's the dungeon, there's like trapdoors.
The bit with Zenigata, I'm surprised we haven't talked about him yet.
Yeah.
Zenigata, like the bit, man. So much stuff about it. The bit where we actually do see Zenigata and Lupin, which rarely happens. Well, I wouldn't say rarely happens.
Well,
they
do that whole thing, oh, we've got to like band together and make a truce in the face of a greater evil.
Which is one of the best tropes in Lupin
for me. I love that trope in like anything, but I love it when they do it in this because Zenigata is such a like pissed off man.
They do it in the first. And even in the new Koiki film. Not which isn't out yet, but like to probably Lupin's gonna be too good as any.
This was probably one of the first times they did that though, to be fair.
Yeah, this was pretty much before Mystery Mama didn't do it, does it?
No, Mystery Mama, he's still chasing them all over and
shall we talk about Mystery Mama?
Yeah, we can
and then first.
Yeah. One more thing to cover. I mean, Castle Cagliostro, like I say, just as a closing sentiment, it's such a good film. It's a great like introductory sort of thing. You don't have to be into anime to like it. I think
it's probably. I'm surprised it's never put in the Ghibli. I know it's not by Ghibli, but I'm surprised it's not put in that camp.
It sometimes does. I just prefer to put it in the Lupin film camp because it's got more in common with that franchise. Because this is another thing I've just remembered: the music as in general, like the
Yuji
jazz,
Ono.
The sort of Yuji Ono jazzy score, which is like he's absolutely at his peak in this film. It's so good. And like all of the action, like I say, there's the clock tower and the whole finale, and it's just a lush film. It's really feel good.
I can't
stop
thinking about the bit where he's like Zenigata and him's on the like on the helicopter trying to escape.
Yeah, like that's what I mean. There's like this great action set pieces, but it's also just like it's just like such a nice feel good thing. Like they're just such a great little set of characters compared to
Mystery of Mama.
Compared to Mystery of Mama, where most of them are complete scum in that film, especially
like,
Lupin.
They make Lupin more of a sex pest than usual.
It's literally like
Hitler's involved in the plot.
It's like Two-Face. It's like looking at these two films, they are so different, and yet, they have like quite a lot in common. They still have they have the car chases. They have the character of Lupin being like. You know, the whole bright jacket and him and his gang. But then this one, I like the fact that this one raises the stakes by having, because I think this one's like a better translation of the TV show, because like obviously the TV show that could only get away with so much with it being on TV in the 70s.
Pretty much even then, part one was very raunchy for what it was.
Yeah, part one was quite,
because there was a lot of nudity with Fujiko, which was something.
Something you generally didn't see, and I mean, obviously, you see that in like
without getting us pretty much censored, but it's a bit where Fujiko very much there's a lot of dirty stuff.
Mystery of Mama was like it does that, but it's like you could tell they were allowed to do it on film, so it's like it's a bit much. I think in some cases, it just blows me away that
like a lot of Lupin films rarely do this. The Lupin films recently, the new ones which are coming out now, which are absolutely flipping excellent for what they are.
Yeah,
very much take ideas from Mystery Mama.
Mystery Mama had like a big influence though. That's the thing. Like Castle Cagliostro is the biggest, probably the most famous
in media, but for Lupin as a whole, for how adult it can be.
But yeah, for Lupin as a franchise, this was the big breakthrough film that sort of cemented it as like quite a big Japanese
Mamo
franchise.
Being a parody of John Williams, the idea that he has
Paul Williams. The fact that it's like a little dude who looks like Paul Williams, who's like this evil mastermind
who has clones of Napoleon, Hitler, people, and it's just like it's so over the top.
But at that point in the film, you really do believe anything's possible.
And then you find out Zenigata has kids in that one.
That's right. Yeah, I forget about that. There's the
and
whole
they
thing
never mention that in the lore.
They never mention that again. end. But
it's so goofy because Mystery Mama is always one I really want to show at Cine Club, but it's just so over the top. I don't think
it's so over the top. I think it would go over a lot of people's heads, but it was, for me, who watched it when I was already quite into the franchise and I'd watched quite a lot of episodes of the show and got a feel for the sort of vibe. I mean, even then I was still a bit like, Jesus Christ, like, what is this? But at the same time, you just get used to it, don't you? You're just like, oh, this is so totally like Lupin, you know?
And then you have like Lupin the First, which very much goes back, which I was like, we're full circling now.
Full circle. I mean, Lupin the First is another one where Hitler is a character.
Yeah.
How often Hitler shows up in this franchise?
Pretty much the main villain is like the Reich, like pretty much it's the Reich of like...
Yeah, it's like on a nerve, it's like some sort of... Like
pretty much he believes
Nazi.
That Hitler is alive. And then there's a bit in the film which it became a meme now. It's Lupin dressed up.
Well, he dresses himself up as Hitler to break into their sort of headquarters because the guy just doesn't question for a second that this is the real Hitler and not just a Mission Impossible thing guy in a sort of costume. It's,
and I believe
it's so stupid.
You could see,
like,
once again, you could see so much inspiration to Castle in that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean,
like I said, Fire Treasure, like the Fire Treasure is music is used quite a bit.
Yeah.
In that. And it's just like insanely well done too, because I think Lupin the First, while having it how simple it is, like a lot of people complain, but similar to Castle, I love how simple it is.
I don't mind, because I mean you can draw a lot of comparisons. I mean the token girl character of the first is very, very similar to Clarice, and like that dynamic with her.
But instead, she wants to go to university.
That's the whole thing. Yeah, the whole point. Her like whole us. Character arc is she's desperate to go to a good university, and she has to rely on a master criminal to get her in.
Which
or something.
The end, which is funny. I love the ending where he does get her in.
He
somehow.
Does. Yeah, he gets her into university, and she's happy. But even that, like, I like that she goes on this adventure, and then she still.
And
gets,
then you have the
and everybody gets. What
oh,
they want.
I think the film's all set in the '60s too. It's very much a different time period.
I love the
because you see old school airplanes. You see the blimp, which is legitimately. Yep. You see, like...
It's like The Rocketeer, where it's got that sort of pulpy, old-school style.
Not as like, thing, but it's like it feels very much a homage of Indiana Jones.
Oh, 100%.
Compared to Mystery, which is very much a... Pretty much, I don't want to say this, but pretty much of, like, raunchy films.
Well, Mystery and Mama felt like, that was like... It was 70s sensibilities with, like, a sci-fi futuristic plot, which... I mean, the visuals in all of these films are really interesting. Mystery and Mama, just when you were saying... The introduction of Mamo, I think, is a really, really great bit where he's
playing on the piano.
He's playing on like a harp or a piano or something, and he like goes up the stairs and just that the visuals of that sequence, like and the visuals of a lot of it, it's so surreal, but like and so very 70s, but like it gets away with it so much. This is what I mean, like they balance each other out.
Every time, like we have a conversation about this every day about Lupin, but like, every time I think about it. It always Mystery Mama is the one which always strikes me as the one which I think Castle's still my favorite, but it's the most memorable because there's and then you have First, which has like brilliant. I'm surprised you haven't said this. Brilliant CGI.
The CGI is unbelievable. Like the fact that no other. I don't think I've ever seen another anime translated.
Dorymon
like,
comes close, but even then, like Lupin the First just takes it all.
It's insane how it's just the way they move, like the way the sort of light and shadow, the way they look just like their proper characters, but they also like. Move like the way they did in 2D. Which
I like
is so
how
impressive.
Different it is because this sounds a bit of like bad saying this, but like Spider-Verse animation is cool and everything. But I love how they aren't copying it.
Exactly that.
They're trying something unique. Also,
it's not even Spider-Verse. It's like it is
DreamWorks. DreamWorks like animation.
Yeah, it's that
very
kind
much
of,
more squish and stretch.
Totally, it's that kind of budget applied to like a really really impressive anime thing, and I think that helps with the action as well because obviously there's quite a few Fiat 500 car chases in the first as well. And
the opening,
looks really good.
And then you have the plane chase, which is probably one of my favorite scenes. And the ending where they're fighting on the plane.
It's so good though, isn't it? That's the thing. It's like there's a lot of moments. And I mean, but these characters really do work. And so they're so versatile because they work in so many different settings, whether it's like a realistic, grounded Italian countryside with a castle. Like Castle Cagliostro.
Then you have an island.
Yeah, or this like sci-fi fantasy island with a giant, like with space and all that.
And
weird
they're fighting
stuff.
Like in a forest, which ironically is going to happen in the next one, which I don't know what I'm talking about. But like, it's just so exciting that we're finally getting another, ironically, another Lupin film in cinema.
Yep.
But this time, instead of being CGI, it's 2D.
It's back to 2D, which is
after
interesting.
After 20 years, 30 years since Dead or Alive. Like,
that's right. Yeah, actually, because Dead or Alive was the last one I think they did that was like a proper. I mean, obviously the Koike films, but they're more like, they never TV got theatrical special. Releases. They're not like proper theatrical releases. Yeah.
Which I do hope I show in City Club one day.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, it's a very fascinating franchise and one that I'm a big fan of. And obviously, you know, we could go into the TV shows as well.
The TV specials
bit,
too.
That's a bit beyond the scope of this episode. But yeah, check it out. I think those are the three best ones in my opinion. I think those are the sort of a great place to get a feel for like the three different styles of this franchise.
Which is funny because I wouldn't recommend Mystery Manor to anyone, but at the same time, I'm starting to kind of go, eh.
I think it's one of those ones where it's like, if you're going to start watching anime, it's worth at least watching that.
Because it does, it pretty much describes how weird this franchise can be.
Yeah, and it was one of the first, like ever really, first anime theatrical films. So it deserves its respect for that. So yeah. Well, I think that's all the car chases and stealing we have time for this week. What's your favourite Lupin the Third film? Let us know at cineclub.podcast@sparksunderland.com.
Or you can contact us at @thecineclubpodcast_spark on Instagram or at @the.cineclub.podcast on TikTok or the Cineclub Podcast on Facebook. They're good ways to keep up to date on all the latest Cineclub developments.
As always, this episode is recorded and produced by us, the Sunderland University students, as well as being edited by Emily Mayen. And a special thanks to Steve Cannon, Barbara Sadler, and Richard Berry. A reminder that our two master criminals this week have been me, Jake,
and me, Dion. This has been a Cineclub production for Spark. Thanks for listening.